Money makes the world go round,
the world go round,
the world go round. Money makes the world go round, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck or a pound,
a mark, a yen,
a buck or a pound is all that makes the world go round. That clinking, clanking sound can make the world go round. Money, 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 money.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dimitri Papadimitriou, who's the president of the Levy Economics Institute and Jerome Levy Professor of Economics at Bard College. He has testified on a number of occasions in hearings of Senate and House of Representatives committees of the U.S. Congress, was vice chairman of the Trade Deficit Review Commission of the U.S. Congress, and was a member of the Competitive Policy Council Subcouncil on Capital Allocation. He was also a distinguished scholar at the Shanghai Academy of Social Sciences. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dimitri Papadimitriou.
Thank you very much for having me.
And this banking crisis now in Cyprus, first of all, Cyprus, with a population of a little over a million people, apparently have banking assets that are eight times the size of the country's economy, which I believe is something like $25 billion a year in GDP. So how does that compare, say, to Iceland? Is this a similar situation to what happened in Iceland, where you had foreign deposits that were far exceeded this tiny island country? In the case of Iceland, I believe the population is even under half a million.
There are some comparisons that one can draw with Iceland, but I think that the case with Cyprus is the tax rate was very low, and it was possible to attract deposits, especially from Russia and the Middle East. So clearly, it was not that they were paying a lot of money. There is a lot of allegations that most of the deposits were from Russian oligarchs, that they were actually laundering money, which is not certainly has been verified. But even if you are to assume this, you know, this is falls under the purview of monetary policy. Monetary policy is supposed to be independent. So applying sort of a tax or what I might call a confiscating property is something which is unheard of and raises a lot of questions. I'm not too sure whether Berlin or Brussels actually had given a lot of thought, or even the IMF. And it seems that because of the repercussions that we see in terms of the markets all over, not only in Frankfurt and in Europe, but also in the U.S. and also in Asia, there is the question of contagion. You're quite correct when you said that Cyprus is a very small island with a very small GDP. That's probably 0.2% or 0.3% of the Eurozone GDP. But the question is really contagion. Even though many people might not know really where Cyprus is, nevertheless, the contagion is a serious event, which I'm not sure that it was taken into consideration, or at least it wasn't priced correctly in terms of what the risk was when you're making that decision, that you will tax to whatever extent all deposits, which means that what one considered a guarantee of deposits, the whole idea of deposit guarantee and insurance is now out of the window. The question would be, what would we see if we see anything happening in Spain, in Italy, or even in Greece or elsewhere? It's not really clear whether the countries in the periphery that seem to be running into trouble in meeting the targets of, as they said, by Troika, would be actually let free, and not this tool, which new tool that's been used by Berlin and Brussels, would not be used. So, just to give you an example, in Spain, you know, there are almost 3 trillion deposits, 3 trillion euro deposits. Think about what will happen if there is a bank run. We are looking for actually a complete dissolution of the Eurozone.
Well, let's try and sort of go through the steps then of how this situation evolved in Cyprus and why Cyprus is key at this point. This is all to do with a bank tax, a one-time levy imposed on the banks in order to get a 10 billion euro bailout from the EU and IMF. And the assumption is if Cyprus doesn't get this 10 billion euro bailout, that it really could go under and therefore have to leave the eurozone. So that's what I understand is at stake. So first question is, how did Cyprus get into this problem in the first place? My understanding is that the banks in particular were carrying too much Greek debt. Is that right?
Correct. So this was a decision which was made by the Troika, that is the IMF, the European Commission, the European Central Bank, to have a haircut for the private sector holdings of the Greek sovereign debt. So the Greek banks, the Cypriot banks, were holding a sufficient amount, significant amount of that debt. So when you get a 50% par value or 71% in terms of present value haircut, that is a significant hit for that the banking sector has to absorb. And it's not possible to absorb it, especially in a small island like Cyprus, with, as you said, a very small GDP. So the question is that they were forced to take this haircut from somebody else. You know, it was not really their decision, and they had no choice in the matter. And if you were to consider in terms of the numbers, you know, 17 billion euros, it's really a drop in the bucket, as opposed to what it is they have extended to Greece, what they have extended to Ireland, what they have extended to Spain and Portugal, and what they might actually extend to others that were running to a problem. So to allow, or at least to enforce, that they will have to raise 5.7 billion euros from small depositors and large depositors, I think is unconscionable and I think unethical.
In order to get 10 billion euros as a bailout, right?
In order to get 10 billion euros. So in other words, to bail out other decisions that they were made, not really from the small depositors have to pay for this. This is really unconscionable.
But surely this kind of a tax, isn't that sort of, it's very troubling, I think, to savers. I mean, first of all, I can't see any economic wisdom in punishing savers, people who save. And it seems to be against all the fundamental principles of professional investing that the shareholders and bondholders, not the depositors, should be feeling the pain of a bank failure. I mean, that I find extraordinary, that you're punishing the depositors and not the shareholders and the bank and the bondholders.
Well, you know, they're not bondholders. That's the unfortunate thing, that the Cypriot banks do not have any outstanding bonds. So they're not bondholders, and I think that in terms of the shareholders, not really a lot to make a difference, because the banks were insolvent to begin with. Mm-hmm. So the 10 billion or the 17 billion, the total package that was supposed to come to actually capitalize the banks. So what you are trying to do is to capitalize the banks by taking the money of the small depositors, and in exchange you tell them that you will give them shares of the banks. I mean, this is ridiculous. And therefore, the question you also said, I want to point out, that this is a one-time affair. But it's not really clear that it's a one-time affair.
Well, in the meantime, of course, since this announcement was made, Cypriots are furiously going to their ATMs, and the banks have run out of money. And so the banks have been closed until Thursday. And the vote, of course, is Tuesday, is it not, in the Parliament about what they're going to do?
That is correct. The vote is on Tuesday. My suspicion is that the vote somehow it will go through, because they will change some of the tax rates in some ways that will make it more progressive. But still, I'm not sure how much money will be left in these banks, because people already have been saying that once this thing starts, it's a slippery slope. And therefore, why would anybody leave his or her money into the Cypriot banks? And why, you know, this should not have a contagion effect in the Greek banks or in the other banks, as I indicated earlier, which means that we're looking for a substantial change in landscape if now what one considered to be a sacred type of an asset is no longer sacred. I mean, what does it mean to have a 100,000 euro for that, for argument's sake, insured? What does it doesn't mean anything, really, because anyone can decide that this 6% could become 10%, could be 12%. If things become very difficult, then of course there's no limit to what the charge would be, and from whom you will actually levy that charge.
And that, of course, is that this one-off tax, which you're suggesting may not entirely be a one-off tax, is 6.75% on savings up to 100,000 euros. That's basically $130,000. And above that, it is anybody holding more than that, sums greater than that threshold, would pay 9.9%. Now,
yes. Now they're talking about changing it, perhaps that between 100,000 to 500,000, where the 500,000 and over could be 15%. You know, we would never dream of doing the same thing in Luxembourg. Luxembourg has a huge financial sector. It doesn't produce very much. You know, this is really what the economy is. We have a similar thing in Switzerland. We never dream of doing such a thing in Luxembourg, which is part of the Eurozone. So what happens if there is a bank run there?
Well, but what's going to happen? First of all, you mentioned the suspicions that the enormous amount of Russian deposits there have to do with money laundering, although it's not been proven. Putin, of course, has come out very angrily about this plan, because presumably all of these Russian deposits are going to have to pay 9.9% on the billions that are there, right?
That's correct. But, you know, to make a decision and say that we're actually doing it in order to punish the Cypriot banks that are accepting perhaps money that is not legitimate, that's not really the business of the Eurogroup. There is a business of a different kind of regulation. You need to have regulation and you need to have supervision. You know, when you have a Eurozone that is made up of 17 different countries and you tell them that it is their responsibility to supervise and to organize their regulatory structure of the banking sector, you should expect that things like that will happen. If you had a pan-European structure of supervision and regulation, then these things wouldn't happen. Not that you will have a safe valve, you know, it doesn't happen, because we saw it happen with HSBC, one of the largest banks, that actually was caught actually doing the same type of thing about money laundering. And that was proven. That's why they paid a huge penalty.
And nobody went to jail, by the way.
And nobody went to jail. So in order to say that, you know, we're going to penalize the Cypriot banks because they were accepting deposits from Russian oligarchs, that's not really the appropriate thing to do. That's not their business to do it. Not that it's a good thing that what they were doing, but that's not really how you fund the bailout, by having a bail-in of the smaller depositors. That's not really how it should happen. And what we see now is, of course, Putin saying this is unfair. But on the other hand, he wants the names of the depositors because he wants to tax them too, which is a good thing that he's doing. But on the other hand, that shouldn't actually be at the expense of Cyprus, that even though it's a small country, could actually be the trigger of dissolution not only of the Eurozone, but perhaps of the European Union. So one has to wonder, what was the European Union for? You know, was it really a customs union to basically help Germany to export and therefore to make it easier for them? Or is it, you know, something bigger and something what the brains of Mitterrand and Herbert Kohl had in mind that unfortunately Angela Merkel doesn't?
Well, but I'm puzzled, Dimitri Papadimitriou, again, president of the Levy Economics Institute and Jerome Levy, professor of economics at Bard College. I'm puzzled if this whole exercise is about making the banks in Cyprus more solvent, then what's to stop these Russian depositors, these oligarchs, et cetera, of taking the money out? I mean, is that going to happen?
It doesn't stop them. I don't think it's going to happen because I'm not sure if indeed there are no legitimate funds. They have very few places to transfer them. But ultimately, they will transfer them. I'm sure they will find other tax havens to be able to park those funds, which will have serious repercussions for that country. It won't happen immediately because it's very difficult to move them to transfer these funds. But it will happen. They won't leave it there because if they have gotten the sense, which I think it was very, very clear, that they really want to tax them, and originally the idea was to tax them at 40%, this is what Mr. Schäuble's idea was as it was reported, then if you were a Russian oligarch, why would you give your money there?
Exactly. But I mean, at this point, what I understand, the people, I don't know what the Russian oligarchs are doing behind the scenes, but the people in the street in Cyprus have been holding up banners blaming Germany for the bailout deal. And of course, the Germans are saying, no, you know, it's not us, it's the Cypriot government and the European Commission and the ECB, the European Central Bank, that decided on this one-time tax. So, what's your understanding
it's always easy to blame somebody else. In the initial hours of Saturday, it was reported that this whole idea was actually hatched by the IMF, but then it was Mr. Schäuble who started putting the numbers together.
Who is Mr. Schäuble?
Mr. Schäuble is the finance minister of Germany.
Of Germany, that's what I thought.
And therefore he started putting the numbers and came up with the 5.7 billion euros that need to be made up somehow. He probably didn't suggest that the 6% be taken by the small depositors, but he was talking about the 40% tax, which is significant amounts of money. This is not, you know, you have to think about what the repercussions would be if indeed this was to happen, and if you were really targeting the Russian oligarchs.
Well, as it stands now, the banks have closed till Thursday. The ATMs have run out of money, and the vote is tomorrow. So if the vote tomorrow, I mean, aren't they caught between a rock and a hard place? They've got to get the bailout, otherwise they really will default and leave the euro. Isn't that?
Oh, I'm sure that they will pass some kind of a bill with some different, perhaps, percentages, more progressive taxation, tax rates, as you call them, tax rates. But I think this is not going to stop a bank run when the banks open, which now the banks won't open until Thursday. The banks will be closed tomorrow and will also be closed on Wednesday. So when banks open on Thursday, we will see what's happening. My suspicion is that there will be a continuous bank run.
And a run to where? Because these are euros. Are they denominated Cypriot euros like the Greek?
No, they're euros. But you know, people will keep them. Will keep them in their homes. They won't keep them in the banks. This is what's happening in Spain. This is what's happening in Greece as well. People are worried, and therefore they keep money in whatever, you know, the proverbial sort of under the mattress, which creates difficulties in terms of the money in circulation. Because not all countries like the U.S. is advanced in terms of using technology to pay bills and do the kinds of things that problems we have not seen yet.
But my understanding is that each country has a even though the euro is a common currency, they're Spanish euros and they're German euros, and people in Greece, for example, have been changing Greek euros into German euros. Is that not happening?
That's not true. No.
Euros
are all the same.
So it's all the same, and
yes, exactly.
And essentially, they're just stuffing them under the mattress, and we don't know on Thursday what's going to happen.
I mean, wouldn't you do the same thing if you were hit with a tax? Why would you think that somehow or other this is not going to happen again?
Right. Well, also, why would you keep your money in there? Because it's going to be taxed. If you pull it out, it won't. I mean, it's not exactly a brilliant scheme that they've come up with.
That's exactly.
And do you think that, just in closing, that they were really trying to stick that to the Russians? Is that what's going on here?
I think there's some of that.
Yeah. It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, they're against all kinds of things that Russia is doing for energy.
Right.
They were against the new pipeline that they were creating.
Right.
So I'm not surprised at all that they were actually attempting to teach them a lesson. But in the meantime, they are creating a problem for themselves.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Dmitry Papa. Again, I've been speaking with Dmitry Papadimitriou, who's the president of the Levy Economics Institute, and Jerome Levy, professor of economics at Bard College. He's testified to the United States Senate and House of Representatives committees on the U.S. Congress, and was vice chairman of the Trade Deficit Review Commission of the U.S. Congress, and was a member of the Competitive Policy Council Subcouncil on Capital Allocation, and was also a distinguished scholar at the Shanghai Academy of Social Sciences. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the Republican Party's own report, its own autopsy, that says that the Republican Party is scary, narrow-minded, out of touch, and a party of stuffy old men.
Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changin'.